always get the analysis done. Most cost save companies out there now are doing free benefit analyses. So get those done up front, give yourself an idea of what you can expect, and then that gives you and your CPA the information needed to be able to make those decisions.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. What is going on, everybody? You know the drill. Coming at you on Mondays with all things multifamily real estate investing. And today we got a great guest. Our guest comes from Cost Segregation Authority. So we're going to talk all things cost segregation studies, depreciation, bonus depreciation, the tax implications for real estate investors, and the benefits that go along with it to help reduce, in some cases, your tax burden. And so what is a cost segregation study? Well, I'll let Eric explain that in detail, but essentially just kind of a high level definition overview here. Cost segregation is a study where they go in, they break down the useful life of essentially each part of the property that you are either already own or are going to buy. And the reason why they do that is because usually it's spread out over a 29.5 year period. And so you're just going to spread that depreciation over those years, right? Well, with a cost segregation study, you can put the different parts of a building. So think of like the carpet, the roofing, the electrical. You can put these all in different buckets with landscaping outside, the asphalt. All this stuff can go in different buckets from, you know, 5 year, 7 year, 15 year buckets, right? And so then you can depreciate these faster. Instead of spreading it over that 29.5 years, you can take it in those smaller chunks. And then with bonus depreciation, which I'll let him get into too, under the tax law, you can take currently 80%, but before this year, 100% all up in year one. Now you can take 80% in year one. And that's just powerful for real estate investors because depending on your situation can help you offset passive income and capital gains. So this was one of the better conversations I've had on all things cost segregation and bonus depreciation. He really breaks it down. Great conversation. And yeah, without further ado, let's bring on Eric. Hey, Eric, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, John.
No, thanks for taking time out of your day. And like we were just talking about, listeners, I want to share this, is that full transparency, I've worked with Eric's company before. So this is going to be awesome. For those that aren't familiar with cost segregation studies and what it does with bonus depreciation. Yeah, I can make people's eyes glaze over as you get in the weeds, but just let me tell you, it does work. It works really well. So yeah, without further ado, Eric, just tell us about yourself, what you do, and then I guess we can get into like, what is cost segregation and what is bonus depreciation?
Sure. So just a little bit about myself. I've been doing this for about 7 years now. My degree is in accounting. I was in college, trying to get through college, and thought, how can I get out of here as quickly as possible? And I hated writing papers, and math always came somewhat easy. So I decided to do actually finance for a while, and then it ended up being an accounting degree because it required less classes. So accounting, I'm not going to say it's my love and my passion, but it got me out of school as quickly as possible. And like I said, math has always come somewhat easy. So found this job, always been interested in real estate, came across this job that required some accounting background and then also in the real estate industry. And so just love what I do, been doing it for about 7 years now, and work with CPAs and investors across the country on utilizing cost segregations to lower their tax liability.
Awesome. So let's get into that. What is a cost segregation study?
Yeah, great question, Sean. So cost segregation is just accelerated depreciation on your real estate assets. So one of the great benefits of owning real estate is it gives you additional tax deductions. And these typically come in the form of depreciation expenses. So if you buy a commercial property, that property typically depreciates over 39 years, and residential properties depreciate over 27.5. So just to make the math easy, let's say you buy a $270,000 single family home. Essentially, you're going to get a $10,000 write-off, or 1/27th of that, as a write-off every year for the next 27.5 years. And that's great. That means you get to reduce your taxable income by $10,000, save a couple thousand dollars in taxes. That's a great write-off. But what if I'm not going to own my property for 27.5 years, or I want my deductions now? I did study accounting in college, and I know that there's definitely value to the time value of money concept and inflation. I don't want the IRS to hold on to these deductions. I want my deductions now. And the way you can do that is through a cost segregation study where you have a company come in and segregate the different assets within your building. So when you buy a residential unit per se, you're not just buying the land and the walls, you're also buying portions, or you're buying carpet, you're buying countertops, you're buying appliances, you're buying a driveway, some curbing, some sprinkler systems. All these different components that I just mentioned, according to the IRS, do not last 27 and a half years. They depreciate at a much faster rate. The problem is when I buy that building and I buy it for $270 and give that closing statement to my CPA, my CPA doesn't know the value of the parking lot or the driveway. They don't know the value of the appliances. And so you have to have a third party come in, put values to those different components. We provide that report and that revised depreciation schedule to your CPA, and it allows them to take those deductions at a much, much faster rate.
Yeah, at a rate that I think surprises a lot of people that aren't familiar with. And I can tell you that firsthand from my CPA seeing it, from when I wanted to go get a house and get a loan, and they saw those numbers. At first, it doesn't seem real to them because they've never seen anything like it, but it is. So Eric, I guess break down, like, we really want to get into it. Like, what does it look like when you're doing one of these studies? Because there's obviously different life expectancies for each item and the different buckets that they fall into. So if you just want to break that down.
Yeah, there's really three main buckets we're looking at. We've got a 5 and 7 year bucket. That's your what we call personal property. So that's anything on the interior of the building that can be easily removed without damage to the building or structure. So again, if I rip the carpet up out of this office that I'm in, it's the walls won't collapse. If I take this window covering off behind me, the walls won't collapse. And so anything inside that's easily removable is probably personal property, and that gets reclassified and allocated to that 5 year bucket. The 7 year bucket is not a lot. That's kind of your telecommunication line. So if you have a building or a home that's got cable lines or phone lines, sometimes you'll find a little bit of 7 year assets, but not a lot. And then the other main category is your 15 year land improvements. That's all the exterior portions of the building. So curbs, gutters, asphalt, storm drains, trees, bushes, shrubs, retaining walls, fencing, signage, outdoor lighting, those all get reclassified to that 15-year category or land improvements. And so when we're doing a cost seg study, the IRS does require that we do a site visit on each of these properties. And so we'll send one of our cost engineers either to the property or now with, since COVID hit, we've found a way to do these virtually, which has been great, saves costs for everybody. But we can do these site visits virtually or in person. And we'll actually go outside this building here and count the trees, bushes, and shrubs, put a value to those, and then depreciate those over 15 years versus the standard 39 or 27 and a half years.
Wow. So the 15 is the big bucket, obviously. And then the five. Yeah. If you wouldn't mind explaining like the difference, I don't know if you have numbers in front of you, but how powerful it is to like take that bonus depreciation. Well, we can't do it anymore, but as of 2023, we can't. But in 2022, we could take it 100%, right? Year one. Can you just explain the power of that? And then I guess we can get into why it's not 100% going forward.
Yeah. So let's back up just a step. Let's talk about what bonus depreciation is, because some people get bonus depreciation confused with cost segregation. And so I want to just clarify, bonus depreciation has been around for a number of years, and the IRS kind of uses it as a lever to stimulate the economy when it needs to be stimulated. So they say, hey, the economy's not doing great, so we're going to enact a 50% bonus depreciation rule, which means if you go out and buy something, they're going to give you 50% of your depreciation in the first year. And the other 50% gets spread out over the useful life of that asset. So a couple rules. One is it has to be an asset with a useful life of 20 years or less. So naturally you'll think, well, real estate's a 27 and a half year or 39 year asset, so bonus doesn't apply to real estate. And that's not the case, because remember, if you have a cost seg study and we identify 5, 7, or 15 year assets, those do meet that 20 year or less qualification. And so we do get to apply bonus to those. Now, let's go back to 2017 with the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. Donald Trump was our president. And as many of your listeners know, Donald Trump owns a boatload of real estate. So when he revised the tax code, he was pretty slick in the way he did it. And he added a few words to the provisions that said, under the old tax code, bonus depreciation only applied to assets with a 20-year useful life. And it had to be brand new. So I couldn't go out and buy a used bulldozer. I had to go out and buy a brand new bulldozer. And then I got to take 50% bonus at the time. Well, in the new provisions that were written at the end of 2017 in the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, he added five words: new to you, the taxpayer. It used to just say brand new, but now it says new to you, the taxpayer. And that was a huge difference, because now I don't have to go buy a brand new bulldozer. I can buy a used bulldozer. That's new to me, the taxpayer, and I get to apply bonus. And the other thing they did is they changed bonus from 50% at the time to 100%, which was huge. So any assets placed into service between 9/27 of 17 and 12/31 of 2022, so the end of last year, are eligible for 100% bonus. So now let's back up and kind of talk about what that means from a cost segregation standpoint. So we will typically, Sean, segregate about 30% of an asset. That's kind of an industry average. Different asset classes, you get higher averages, lower averages, but on average, let's say 30%. Meaning if I buy a $1 million building, I should state land is non-depreciable. So you always have to back out land. So let's say you buy a building for $1.2 million and you determine the land is worth $200,000. So you've got $1 million worth of what we call depreciable basis. If I segregate that million and I typically find 30% that I can move into those shorter asset lives, you're talking about a $300,000 amount that's getting moved into those shorter asset lives. Well, under the current bonus depreciation, I say current 2022 tax year, you get 100% of that $300,000 all in the first year. Under the old rules, you would have to spread that out. You have to spread your five-year assets out over 5 years, your seven-year over seven, your 15 over 15. But with 100% bonus, you get to take 100% of those all in the first year. So you get that whole $300,000 write-off all in year one. And so bonus depreciation just took cost segregation and put it on steroids is all it's done. It's created massive deductions. And so essentially, if you own real estate, you should be paying very little, if any at all, taxes on that real estate because you should have access to the bonus depreciation, which would create a massive deduction.
Yeah, and it does. I can tell you guys firsthand that it does. And yeah, part of the reason why I assume Trump doesn't want to show his tax returns amongst other things that because it'll show a loss, right?
Yeah.
Like my tax returns show a loss. Now that's not really material, right, per se. Obviously,
non-cash loss. It's that depreciation expense. Exactly.
Right. So, but yeah, it's just powerful stuff. So, Eric, but that's, you said up until 12/31/2022. So what is happening in 2023 and going forward?
Yeah. So there is a sunsetting part of this bonus depreciation that was enacted back in 17. So starting in 2023, instead of getting 100% of those deductions in the first year, you get 80%. So any properties placed into service between January 1st of 2023 and the end of 2023, instead of that 100%, you'll get an 80% of that bonus depreciation in the first year. And the other 20% that's left over spreads out over 5, 7, or 15. So 2024, it drops to 60%. 2025, it drops to 40%. And then it drops 20% each year until 2027 when it's down to zero. Or until we get a new administration and they change the tax law. But currently, that's the schedule. There was talks at the end of last year about possibly extending the 100% bonus into 2023. Congress was discussing it because the economy wasn't shaping up so well for 2023. They said maybe we should extend it. Unfortunately, it didn't get passed last fall. Not to say it can't get passed this fall and they would just retrodate it back to January 1st. But currently, the way the law reads right now, it's 80% bonus for anything placed into service this year.
And then those are dropped to 60, I think, and eventually down to like 25.
Just drops 20% every year until 2027 when it's down to zero.
Yeah. Down to zero, that's what it is. Okay. But currently 80 still, that's still a phenomenal number, right? It's still above historical averages. But yeah, we'd want 100% if we could get it.
Yeah. Remember, we did cost segregation, or you still should do cost segregation when there's 0% bonus because you're moving stuff from 39 to 5, 7, and 15. But with 100% bonus, you're basically moving stuff from 39 to 1 because you're taking 100% of it in the first year. But yeah, 80%, 60%, even 40% is very favorable for real estate investors.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm glad you said that. And so what does it look like? So 80% year one, that 20% is spread out over the remaining life of that property. So what happens if you sell in 5 years?
Yeah.
You're not capturing it all, right?
Right. Great question. That's probably the question we get asked most, Sean, is even CPAs will ask us, Eric, isn't this just a timing issue? If I'm taking these deductions now, don't I have to pay some of this back when I sell it in the form of recapture tax? And let's talk a little bit about that because I think it's important. When you sell an asset, you pay two types of tax. You pay capital gains tax and you pay depreciation recapture. Now, your depreciation recapture is calculated based on how much depreciation you've taken. So I'm sitting here telling you front load and take all your depreciation up front. But doesn't that just mean I have a bigger tax bill when I sell it? And the answer is no. And I'll explain to you kind of why. I'll kind of back into this because I think it's simpler to understand. But let's say, Sean, you buy a property for $1 million and you sell it 5 years later, as you mentioned in your example, for $2 million. So basically everything doubled in value. When you go settle up with the IRS to pay your tax bill on that, you're telling them that everything doubled in value. You bought it for $1 million. 5 years later, all that stuff is worth $2 million, and they're going to make you pay tax on that $1 million of gain. Well, what's happening is your land and your walls are worth more, but your dirty, nasty, stained carpet that you've had for 5 years is not worth double when you sell it 5 years later. It's not worth double what you bought it for. Carpet goes down in value. Your appliances go down in value. Your cabinets go down in value. They don't go up in value. But if you don't have those items segregated out, you can't tell the IRS that. You just have to say, hey, I bought it for $1 million. I sold it for $2 million. You pay tax on that. So kind of to back up, what are your five-year assets? What's your carpet worth after owning the building for 5 years? Worth zero. It's fully depreciated. You should pay no tax on that. And so when you have a cost-seg study done, you pull that carpet out, you pull the cabinets out, because if those are all five-year assets, you've owned them for 5 years in your example, they're worth nothing. So in summary, when you do cost segregation, you're going to take the deductions against your ordinary income of, let's say, 37%. You're going to pay some of that back in 5 years when you sell it at a lower recapture rate of 25% and save the spread. And you don't pay it all back. As I mentioned, you only pay some of it back depending on how long you own the asset.
I think that's something a lot of people don't, you know, kind of put together, right? They just hear bonus recapture and they're like, that's scary. Why?
Right.
Why do it, right? And well, I think there's two reasons why you do it. And one is what you just said. And I think the other is just the basic concept of time value of money.
Right.
If you can keep more of your money now, then you can go reinvest that immediately, build more wealth, right? It's that whole philosophy.
Yep. It's time value of money. And then the second one is inflation. With the way inflation is right now, a dollar today is worth way more than a dollar 27 and a half years from now. So give me my deductions now. So like you said, I can go buy another duplex. I can pay down my debt. I can reinvest it in the stock market, do what I want with it versus letting the IRS hold onto these deductions. I would much rather have those deductions now so that I can put them to work. So that's the whole idea.
And talking about a duplex, I've always had this question. Is it worth doing that for a smaller property? In your eyes, is it worth it to do it any, like almost any type of property?
Yeah. So that's a great question because I think the answer has changed over the last couple of years. So You can do cost segregation on any revenue generating property. Let's just say that first of all. Now, does it make sense on any revenue generating property? Not always. Some factors you need to look at is one, what is your starting basis? So I'll give you an example. $1 million condo in San Francisco, you would think, well, that's probably worth doing cost seg, but what if the land is worth, well, condo is a bad example because you wouldn't necessarily have land. $1 million home in San Francisco. If the land is worth $900,000 and the building is only worth $100,000, that's probably not enough to justify paying for a study because remember, we have to back out the land value. Now, you've got a $200,000 home in Oklahoma where land is only 5%. You've got $180,000 worth of basis. Remember, if we can segregate somewhere around 30% of that, we're getting a $45,000 to $50,000 deduction. And if you're in a 30% tax bracket, that's a $15,000 tax savings. And a study on a property like that might cost you $3,000. So you're paying three, but saving 15. I'll take that all day long. That's with bonus. I should mention that. In the old world, prior to 2017, when bonus didn't apply as much, you really needed probably a $500,000 asset for it to pencil out and make sense to do cost segregation because you had to pay for the study and your tax savings was slightly less than it is now with bonus. So, but with bonus depreciation, we do cost segregation studies on anything from single family homes that someone paid $200,000 for all the way up to ski resorts and large office complex. So yes, that is a big misconception amongst not only investors, but also CPAs. I hear them tell their clients that all the time. Well, hey, it's a $750,000 short-term rental. It doesn't make sense to do cost seg. And I'm like, wait, it absolutely does because we can create a $50,000, $60,000 tax savings on that type of property. And it might cost you, like I said, $3,000 or $4,000 for the study. So that's, good question. But yeah, any revenue generating property where it has a depreciable basis of probably $200,000 or more is definitely worth looking at.
And Eric, say you bought something, maybe like a duplex, maybe you have a portfolio of duplexes, maybe let's say 10 of them that you started buying in the end of 2017. All the way through the end of 2022, and you never did a cost seg study. Can you go back retroactively now, do that, and still get 100% because it landed in that time period of 100% bonus?
Yeah, absolutely. That's something we call a look-back study, where maybe you bought it in 17, you've been taking your standard straight-line deduction every year for the last 5 or 6 years, you find yourself with a tax liability this year. You can absolutely go back and do cost segregation studies on those, because they were put into service during a period of 100% bonus. You get to take advantage of that 100% bonus. There's a quick form. I shouldn't say a quick form. It's an ugly tax form, but we provide it as part of our service. It's called the 3115. And it basically tells the IRS, hey, I've been taking my standard deduction for the last 5 years, 7 years. I'm now going to accelerate that depreciation. And here's the difference in those numbers. And it allows you to take those deductions on your current tax return without having to amend any of those prior year tax returns, which is great. So it's kind of interesting, Sean. You're actually checking a box on that form that says you're going from an impermissible method of depreciation to a permissible method, meaning, hey, IRS, I was depreciating my carpet over 39 years. That was a mistake on my part. I should have been depreciating my carpet over 5. Let me fix that. And here's the difference in those numbers. And you get to drop that on your current tax return. So absolutely. Those are great projects. Sometimes they can yield great results too, because you've got 5 to 7 years of that missed depreciation. You get to bring all that forward and drop it on your current tax return.
Yeah, that was gonna be my question. Like, if you have to take the difference between the two, that makes perfect sense. So if you like owned it for 5 years and your carpet was depreciated over the 29 years, you'd back out that pro rata amount, right? To what it should have been.
Exactly.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Say, hey, based on the cost seg study, you were eligible for 200,000 of depreciation. You've only taken 40. That means you get 160 that we get to drop on the current tax return. So you're exactly right.
And you had a good point there too, that you said about you could decide to do this retroactively if you came into like some big taxable event. And I think that's smart to be strategic about it. So like, if anyone listening is thinking like, oh, maybe I should go do that, I didn't do that the last 3 years, but maybe it makes sense to wait, right?
Yeah.
But also it does, you can carry it forward, correct?
Yeah, you can absolutely carry it forward, but you really want to, cost segregation is one of the few tax strategies I know that you can kind of pick and choose when you implement it. A lot of things, like if you had an existing short-term rental and you put a $100,000 pool in it, that $100,000 needs to be expensed in the year that you put the pool in. Where cost segregation, you have these expenses, you just keep them in your back pocket. And then as your income goes up and you reach those higher tax brackets, or you sell a property and have a huge capital gain, there's a number of instances where you find yourself with a big tax bill. That's when you kind of pull that card out and say, hey, I'm going to do cost segregation now on a few of my properties because I want to get myself out of that 37% tax bracket into something more manageable. And so you really want to use these cost segregation deductions to manage tax brackets. And I think that's a great strategy.
Close to that zero as possible tax bracket.
Yes, that's right.
You kind of answered my question, because what I was going to answer is, so if you're an active and a real estate professional, as they call it,
yeah.
If we want to get into that, it's, what is it, a minimum of 750 hours a year, and you have to spend, I think, 51% of your time on real estate related activities. So exactly. If you qualify for that, that also means, Eric, that you can not only use the depreciation against passive income from your real estate, but you can use it to offset active income from any other scope of your life or your part or your spouse's life as well. And you can offset it against the capital gains too, right? From properties you sell?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's when oftentimes for me, for example, I'm not a real estate professional, but if I had an asset and I sold it, had a large capital gain, I could then do cost segregation on a couple of my other properties, create this deduction to offset that gain and pay no tax on my capital gain.
Oh, so you don't have to be a real estate professional to do that?
No, you don't. So when you have a gain, it unlocks that passive loss and allows you to use it up to the amount of your gain. And so that's a good time to utilize cost segregation, is if you have a gain. Now, like you mentioned, if you're a real estate professional, that's kind of like the golden ticket, right? If you do the 750 hours a year doing real estate, spend 51% of your working time, now any deductions we create through real estate or we accelerate through cost segregation on your real estate, those can be used to offset not only your rental income, as you mentioned, but also your active income. Or maybe your spouse has a high W-2 job where they're making high W-2 money. You're the real estate professional, create this deduction and offset their W-2 income and pay no taxes anywhere, which is great. So
that goes back to what we're talking about, time value of money too. You're keeping more of that active income from your spouse, maybe, then you go invest it right then and keep up with or beat inflation as well. So
absolutely.
No, this is the stuff I love, which is funny, Eric, because when you're talking to like other people or prospective investors and you come off with this enthusiasm and then you just see their eyes glaze over, it's hard to, you realize they're not completely grasping it because it is so powerful. And I think that's obviously not the only reason, but one of the reasons why the real estate industry has exploded over the last 5+ years. It's so powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I tell people all the time, if you own real estate and you're paying taxes, you need to probably consult with your CPA because...
Or get a new one.
or get a new one. Yeah. Because right now it's such a favorable environment for real estate investors. And I was talking to a gentleman last week, we were doing a podcast and I was mentioning and talking to him and he brought up a great analogy. I played sports growing up and he's like, you know, we play offense to make all this money or to bring in money from our real estate activities. But then if you don't play defense on the back end and you don't come up with a tax strategy that helps protect this money, who cares if you make $1 million this year if you're paying out $950,000 in taxes, right? So you got to play offense and defense. If you've ever watched any sport, you watch a basketball team that's great at offense, but can't, you know, I don't care if you can score 130 points in a basketball game. If your defense gives up 131, it doesn't matter. And so being able to play both offense and defense with your money is such an important thing. And so many people just focus on the offense, like, hey, I've got this great property, great returns, and then they go get their taxes filed at H&R Block in the Walmart lobby. And it's like, yeah, you had all this money, but now you just paid it all because you had no tax strategy behind it. So,
right, exactly. And I think that's the important part too, is you got to have a team in this business. And a big part of that team is obviously CostSeg, but paired with that is a CPA that understands real estate. So those listening, you should definitely be networking. They're successful real estate investors in your market. Ask them who they're using.
Yeah.
I think that's smart because just like anything in life, not all CPAs, not all tax advisors are created equal.
Right. And there's a big difference. I always tell people there's a difference. A lot of us will pay for a tax preparer, and a tax preparer takes your documents, your W-2s, your K-1s, they run it through their software and they tell you what your tax bill is. That's a tax preparer. They're just preparing the taxes for you versus paying a couple $1,000s for a good tax strategist where they're sitting down with you 3 or 4 times a year talking about what properties you're buying, talking about what kind of income you have coming in, different strategies on how to strategically set up your businesses so that you're not paying taxes on the back end. That's a tax strategist, and they still do taxes, but they're very different than a tax preparer. And so I invite all your listeners to think about their tax preparer. Are they a tax preparer or a tax strategist? And as you build your portfolio, you really want to get into that area where you've got a tax strategist, not just somebody preparing your taxes, because people leave tens of thousands of dollars on the table by not having the right strategy in place when it comes to managing their portfolios.
Yeah, 100%. I recently heard this guy that he got a CostSeg study on one of his properties and he brought the K-1. So listeners, you get a K-1 from the entity, generally the LLC that owns said property. That's what is tied to that CostSeg usually. And so then that LLC will spit out a K-1 for any of the members of that LLC. And so that K-1 will show that depreciation number. And this individual showed it to their, I don't know, it wasn't a CPA. I think it was just a tax. It might've been a preparer or advisor. And that individual just didn't think it was legal. They're like, this can't be right. And so to the point, like what Eric's saying, they're not all created equal. And you really need to do your due diligence and a homework before you just hire one.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So Eric, say someone locks up a property, they got it under contract. When is the best time to call you guys and bring you guys in? And what does that look like?
Yeah. So we always will do a free benefit analysis. So I think anytime you buy a property, you should have a free analysis run. We even do it oftentimes before people close on properties because they want to know what the potential of that property is. So as I mentioned earlier, different asset types get different types of returns from a cost segregation standpoint, but we'll always do a free benefit analysis. So I always recommend getting that done up front. Doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to get the cost seg study done that year. But once you have the analysis done, then that gives you an idea of what's available to you. And then you sit down with your tax strategist and say, okay, hey, I bought this property this year. I've got $600,000 of depreciation if we need it. Is this the right year to do the CostSeg study? And they may say, no, you've got some carry forward from last year or from some of your other properties. We don't need a $600,000 deduction this year. Let's keep it in our back pocket. And then you just play it next year when you have higher income and less deductions. And so always get the analysis done. Most CostSeg companies out there now are doing free benefit analyses. So get those done up front. Give yourself an idea of what you can expect. And then that gives you and your CPA the information needed to be able to make those decisions. I always recommend getting a couple benefit analysis. As you mentioned, not all CostSeg companies are equal. Very similar to CPAs. If you take your building to 5 different CostSeg companies, you're going to get 5 different results because each of us have our own interpretations of the law. We have our own experience. We have our own. Some CPAs are more aggressive than others. Some CostSeg companies are more aggressive than others. And so get a couple analysis done. So you can kind of pick and choose and compare the two and then go with what you're comfortable with in terms of obviously the fee and then also what your return on your investment is going to be.
Can that ever get you in trouble, Eric? Like if you picked a company that is more aggressive than the rest?
So yes, it can. There are companies out there that are super aggressive. I always ask a company, if I was doing cost segregation, talk to me about your audits. And so just to give you an example, we've done close to 12,000 studies. We've been involved in 12 audits and we've never had to change any of our numbers. And so that's a good reflection of the quality of our reports. We're comfortable. We can sit down with an IRS agent. They're going to say, hey, how did you come up with this land value? We'll have the documentation of the paperwork to say, hey, here's the methodology we used. Here's the comps in the area. And as long as you can provide that, you really don't have much to worry about. I'll be honest with you. I would say in our industry, there's very few. I know of only one competitor that's super aggressive. Most of our competitors are way too conservative, in my opinion. And so you might get, I say we get 30 to 35% segregation. I've seen companies on the same building get 12 to 18%.
Wow.
Where's the disconnect? But if you read, there's an audit guide that the IRS puts out. They actually just revised it for the first time since 2007. They revised it last year, but it tells us how to do these studies. And then it's just experience. I'll give you a quick example. We had a client, like for example, when you get new construction costs, sometimes on that new construction cost, it says finished woodwork. And a lot of times cost seg companies won't take that because they don't know what it is. They don't know if that means door frames, which are not, they can't take, or is it crown molding around the top of my office here that I can take. And so it's not a matter of they don't know, and so they don't ask. We're a little more thorough. We'll say, hey, I see finished woodworking on here. Let's talk to the contractor and see if they can break that up between the doors and the crown molding. Because if they do, the crown molding, it clearly states in the audit guide, you can take crown molding. But for some of the low-cost providers out there, they just don't take the time to dive deep into the details. And so you might miss that crown molding. Another example is we were in an audit once and the audit agent told us that they didn't like the method we used to calculate our electrical allocation. They said, we want you to use this court case versus this court case. And we're like, okay, that's fine. We did. And it created a larger number. We were on the conservative side. We used the different court case and it created a larger number. Well, we have that letter from that agent in our files now. And so we use that new court case on every study we do and it creates a larger number. And if we ever get audited, we're going to pull that letter out and say, look, your agent told us to do it this way. That's why we did it this way. And they're not going to have anything to stand on. And so experience and interpretation of the law are two real important things when it comes to picking a quality cost seg provider.
Love it. And like I said, guys, I've used them and they do a great job. And to your earlier point of some people do it before they even close. And that's what we do. If you're doing a bigger deal that maybe you're syndicating, raising money, that's a great tool to be able to get actually give an estimated number to your investors of what they can roughly expect for bonus depreciation. So that's what we do.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, and sometimes on those syndication deals, if you leverage it right with bank financing, sometimes you can tell your investors, listen, give us $100,000 towards this project. We're going to give you $130,000 of depreciation in return. I mean, sometimes you get more than 100% back as a deduction. Sometimes those syndication deals can be leveraged highly with a bank loan. And so, because we do our cost segregation, not on your down payment, but what the purchase price of the property is. So if you're raising $2 million, but you're buying a $10 million property, if you raise $2 million and you're buying a $10 million property, when we do our cost seg, we're going to come up with roughly $3 million of depreciation that you get to give back
right
to your investors. And so sometimes you can get even higher returns in that sense.
Yeah, we've seen it. Like I said, it's powerful. And
yeah,
just so everyone knows, the name of Eric's company is Cost Segregation Authority. And I didn't realize this earlier, Eric, but your tagline is not all studies are created equal. So there we go.
Yes.
We already hit it. We already hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah, we feel strongly about that so much that we plastered it all over our website. So.
I love it. All right. Before I get into the final four questions, Eric, first, is there anything you want to add that maybe we haven't touched on?
No, I think we touched on a lot of it. The last thing I'll just say is use this as a resource. We don't bill by the hour or anything. And so if any of your listeners have any questions, I know we'll have our contact information at the end, but I just want to say, please use this as a resource, you guys, because we work with investors all across the country. We work with CPAs all across the country. So we kind of see the latest and greatest on different methodologies on what people are doing. And so if you have questions about earned business income or child tax credits, don't call me because I don't know the answers to those. But anything depreciation or real estate tax, we can usually get you the answer if we have the answers here. So just use this as a resource.
Awesome. Yeah. And where can the listeners find you?
Yeah. So the best place is our website. So it's just www.cost, COST, SEG, authority. So costsegauthority.com. My contact information's on there. My cell phone's on there. My email. Feel free to give me a call anytime. We try to answer our phone as much as possible and be available as much as possible. So don't hesitate to reach out.
Awesome. Love it. All right. Final four questions. And I'm going to change them up a little bit because generally they're aimed more towards like an operator in the business. But usually the first question is, you know, why real estate as an investment vehicle? And I guess you can answer that maybe from the depreciation side, right? Like, why do you think it's a powerful asset class that a lot of people invest in? And like, there's that famous quote that from Carnegie, 90% of all millionaires own real estate. So why do you think that is?
Yeah. Well, I can tell you just from a tax perspective. So the tax code is thousands of pages long. And in that tax code, there's only a few pages that tell you why you need to pay tax. The rest of the pages tell you how not to pay tax. And one of the big things that the government does is they use the tax code to get across their agenda. And so they know that if people are out buying real estate, that means there's commissions to be paid, there's furniture to be bought, there's a whole number of things. It just stimulates the economy, and they know it's good for the economy. And so the tax code is very favorable, especially in today's environment, to real estate investors. And so that's one of the main reasons I would say get into real estate. I don't know of any other, I mean, the stock market's somewhat that way, but not nearly as favorable as real estate. But again, the government incentivizes us to do what they want us to do, and they incentivize us through the tax code. And so there's so many tax breaks and tax opportunities for real estate investors that I just think it's a great sector to get into.
Couldn't agree more. All right, question two. And I guess I usually ask, what is a common mistake you see investors make? And you can answer in that way, or we can kind of shift it to what's kind of a common mistake you see them make in terms of setting up their, I guess, like tax profile, right? Of like what they should or should not be doing.
Yeah, I think that the best answer, and we'll kind of go back to what we touched on, is I think so many people don't play defense. I know I used that analogy before, but we play a lot of offense, but no one likes to play defense. And so having a tax strategy, I can't tell you how many times I've met investors that have multiple millions of dollars of investment properties, and they're doing their own taxes on TurboTax, and their background is in communications. And so I'm like, listen, you're not an accounting person. You need to find somebody. You need to be humble enough to say, hey, accounting is not my thing. Go pay somebody and pay somebody what they want. If they're a good real estate focused CPA, they're worth every penny that they charge. And so I think that's the biggest mistake I see investors make, is just not knowing and being humble enough to say, hey, I know my strengths. I'm going to stay in this lane. I'm going to surround myself with people in these other areas. And a good tax strategist, a good CPA, is an important part of that team. And don't be afraid to spend a couple thousand dollars on a good CPA, because it's worth, you spend a couple thousand, but if they can save you $100,000 in taxes, you're coming out way ahead. So that's probably the biggest mistake I see, is just people not understanding the value of playing that defense and just trying to do their taxes themselves, or using their family CPA that their parents use that doesn't focus on real estate, but it's a family friend, and they just feel trapped. And so definitely go out and find yourself, as you build your portfolio, find yourself a CPA that focuses on real estate, because it's worth every penny.
Yeah, be humble and don't be cheap.
Yes, there you go. Way to summarize. That's exactly what I said, is the great summary.
Yeah. And like I touched on this before, Eric, you know, I recently got a loan for my home I'm buying, right? And at first, they were so confused by my tax returns. They didn't know which way to look, how to look at it. And I pay pretty good money for my CPA. Like, obviously not a brag, but you know, I do, because I think it's smart. And his email and how he broke it down and explained it allowed me to get the loan, because the lender then, they're like, oh, that makes perfect sense. And for those that aren't familiar, what they usually do on a residential loan is they add back depreciation into your income.
Right.
So that just popped my income a crazy amount. And these questions are for you, so I'll step back, ask the next one. But what is a resource that people can, like, what is a great resource if they're not really familiar with cost segregation, bonus depreciation? Like, what's a good resource they can go check out?
Yeah, I'll give you a book. One of my favorite books is by a gentleman named Tom Wilright. He's a CPA, and he has a book called Tax-Free Wealth. It's not necessarily specific on cost segregation. I know it mentions it, but it really talks about setting up your businesses and looking at things differently from a tax perspective. It's one of the greatest business books that I've read, and I would recommend that to any of your listeners. If you're looking at ways on paying less taxes, he gives a number of great tips in there on different vehicles to do that. And so it's called Tax-Free Wealth by Tom Wheelwright.
Awesome. I actually listened to him speak in February.
Yeah.
Got a copy of that book. So it's on my list. I'm excited to read it.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah, he's a great guy too. Very smart guy.
Yes. And he doesn't get the book. I'll be honest. You know, you think about, oh my gosh, reading a book about taxes is going to be awful, but keeps it pretty generalized. I mean, specific enough, but not too far in the weeds where it's going to put you to sleep. It's the good side of tax on how to save taxes. And so a great read for anybody who's interested.
All right. Last question here. Every Friday, Eric, I do a personal finance episode. That's my background in finance. And I think it's important because it's not what you make, but what you keep. And that's obviously a very important part of what we're talking about today. So the question is, if you had a time machine, the good old time machine question, and you could go back and talk to young Eric,
right?
What's one piece of financial, like personal finance advice you would give young Eric?
For me, my regret, if I could go back in time, would have been to get into real estate sooner. I know that sounds a little cliche, but I always was interested in it and never took the time. I always had excuses why I didn't take the time to look into it further. And so I just kind of delayed. But I just think that real estate, there's such opportunity in real estate for anybody who puts the time in. You don't have to have tons of money to get into real estate. There's a number of ways to get into real estate with not a lot of cash. But I think that's the one important thing that if I could go back in time, I would say, hey, don't be such a wuss. Get into it. Do your research. I was always standing on the sidelines, scared to get into it. And I wish I would have taken the plunge a lot sooner. I didn't have my first investment property till I was about 40 years old. And so I wish I would have gotten into it much sooner. And then the other thing I would tell, not so much finance advice, but kind of going back to what I reiterated earlier, is the young Eric thought he was good at everything. And it took a lot of hard lessons to realize that, hey, you're not an expert. You know, what is the saying? An expert of, no. The master of all trades is an expert at none, or something along those lines. But basically, if you do everything, you can't be an expert in one thing. And so that would be the other thing I would tell myself, is just know what you're good at, be humble enough to know what you're not good at, and accept it and say, hey, I'm not a great marketing person, and go find yourself a marketing person. And so that's the other thing I would tell, as your listeners start to build their portfolio, build their teams. Some of your listeners are great at raising money. Some are great at finding the deals, and know what you're good at, and then outsource everything else and build yourself a solid team, because we can't be experts in everything. So that's the other piece of advice.
Yeah, definitely a team sport. And
yeah,
that's how you grow. That's how you scale. That's how you become successful.
Absolutely.
Well, I really appreciate your time, man. This has been a great show.
Yeah.
I picked up some nuggets that I didn't know before. So I got some value. So thank you. And I'm sure the listeners did too.
Yeah, no, thanks for having us. We're glad to be here. Like I said, don't ever hesitate to reach out to us as a resource. We'd love to help any way we can.
Awesome. Appreciate it. Well, listeners, as I always say, easy doesn't pay well, and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have your money work hard for you, so we can all create the lives of our dreams and make this world a better place. All right, I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review, and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.